Welcome to the Six Again Get to Know series, where we chat with NRL personalities from players to coaches to journalists. Let's kick off. Hey, welcome into the latest edition of our Get to Know series. This was recorded in the week leading up to the grand final. It's our interview with Gavin Badger, ex-NRL referee. Gavin gives us an insight into what it was like being a referee and his interests off the field. Really hope you enjoy it. All right, guys, welcome into a special episode of Six Again. We're joined tonight, Jared and I, by one of the, let's say, out there characters of the NRL, in Gavin Badger, one of the, unfortunately now ex-NRL referees, but still involved in the game. So he's joining us from Sydney?
Yep.
From Sydney. There we go. tonight. So welcome in, Gavin.
Hey, how are you guys?
Yeah, I'm really good. We did kind of give a hint on last week's show that we'll line up an interview, and Gavin was on time and he was sitting there for 15 minutes by himself waiting for us. And then we jumped on an hour later waiting for him. And it wasn't till then that I realized daylight saving and we'd missed him by an hour. So it's a week later, but he's kind enough to join us again. So that's kind of where we're at. Jared's got an interest rather than a passion, maybe. It'll be up to him with regards to officiating, refereeing after he's done some himself. So I might let Jared lead the questioning.
Yeah, so I did it when I was younger a bit. The highest grade of referee, I think, was under 18s. I always felt that because I did that and played at the same time, referees got, I don't know if it's unfair, but a fair amount of blame for outcomes of games, whereas I think players need to take a bit more responsibility. That's a very controversial opinion for me. I was just wondering, what's your thoughts on that?
And I'm going to come from, by a slant because of what I do and what I've done for a long time. But I doubt there'd be too many games of rugby league played, whether it be at the NRL level or at, under sixes level, where the referee has had a huge impact on the outcome of the game. Yes, the referee's going to make some decisions here or there, but you think about the amount of decisions the referee makes and how many they actually get wrong compared to errors in players, whether it be drop balls, missed tackles, whether it be, whatever. But for a referee to be able to have a massive influence on the game would be so obvious. We cop it a fair bit that the thing what happens is if it's a decision late in the game, when the game's tight, people are going to think that decision had an outcome on the game. But I follow a lot of NFL as well. I listen to a lot of coaches over there and they give these monumental speeches and stuff like that. And some of the post-game speeches are really good. And Jimmy Johnson, who's one of the great NFL coaches, he's retired now, but he was one of the greats. And he gives a speech. They got beat in a college game when he was a coach of Miami U. And they got beat on a wrong call at the death of a game. It was the last deciding call of a game where they scored a touchdown that would have won in the game. The referees called it short. You watch the game post that and they actually scored the touchdown. And all these players come out in the press conference and they all spoke about if we were good enough, we would run that game. If we were good enough, we wouldn't have been in a position where we needed to score in the last second. And that was his stance that he said. So, really, decisions are made during a game by a referee, but I don't think that they have an impact on the game. I think, they have an impact on the game, but I don't think they have an impact on results.
Okay. So for that reason, because we both love rugby league, obviously, but we follow union, AFL, obviously, I'm not so much into the American sports, but, I've got friends who do. And when we talk about it, you never hear, especially in union, because that's the main one I follow, the referee get blamed. When there's a decision made, there's no players walking up and complaining like they do in rugby league. Well, not as much anyway. A referee's perspective, how do you think NRL should knock that out of the thing? Because when NRL do it, the junior players are doing it, and it's a massive flow-on effect. Do you think that should be part of it, where players should be able to complain, have a chat to you about the decision? And if not, how do you think they should get out of it?
Yeah, well, the AFL have tried for a long time, and they've been really good in it. And it started, for me, you know, being around for a long time, it really started with Todd Greenberg, where he sort of put some parameters around what coaches and players can and can't say post-game and stuff, which I think is a good thing, because straight after a game, there's too much emotion in it.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are going to talk from emotion, not from fact. So I'm a big supporter of coaches and players not being able to say too much in a press conference about officiating, but I have no problem 2 or 3 days later, once everyone's watched it, because then we know we're dealing with fact. So if referees have made errors and, you know, and a coach gets interviewed on Monday, I've got no problem with them talking about that. Graham Annesley does it every Monday. He comes out, does a press conference and talks about all the decisions, because now we're dealing with fact. And if we get things wrong, we're going to put our hand up and say, yep, that was a wrong decision. This one was a right decision. This is why and how. Our sport seems to do it worse than most. There's not too many sports in the world, and I follow a lot of sports, where people know all the names of the officials. Where in rugby league, everyone virtually knows the referee's names. And
I think you just got that beard, mate. Everyone understands.
Yeah, I wanted to put myself out there, and so I get what I'm saying. But going back to one referee is going to add that to that as well, because for a period there were only two refs. When a decision was made, it was the referees. Already we're starting to see it back in one referee. The anything post-game, they actually name the referees. We've also got, you know, all these TV shows through the week where they've got to fill airtime. The easiest thing to do is, and to fill airtime and to create discussion, is to create controversy. So, you know, even in a game of footy, when the game's playing, you see the commentators and that, they'll replay a decision 3 or 4 times before they make a decision on if it's right or wrong. And then if it was wrong off those 3 or 4 replays, then they'll start ripping into the referee. But they've had the luxury of watching those replays in super slow-mo and stuff. So, and because our game isn't a game on fact, like I spoke about the NFL before. The NFL is an easy game to officiate because it's based on fact. You know, everything stops, start, there's a fact. Where our game's grey, it's a lot of advantage, it's a lot of, like even 10-metre penalties, it's all based on referees' opinion and stuff like that. So the reason why our game is so good is because of that. But the reason why our game is so controversial and so over-analysed is because of that as well. So that's the way out that you get.
The balance. So, obviously, last year... I just
want to jump on a couple of things that you've said there, Gavin, that I find really interesting. With both Jared and I agree on the rugby union thing with the... only the captain here talks to the referee, that sort of stuff. And then you've mentioned emotion post-game, and an idea that's been thrown around more, I'd say more by the media. It's been pretty much knocked on the head by NRL board executives, etc. You've got players, you've got coaches doing post-match interviews. Do you think it'll ever get to the point of referees doing post-match interviews as well?
No chance. Couple of reasons is that I don't know what you're going to get out of it. Like, you're going to go in and say, well, you made this decision in the 53rd minute that it was a knock-on. But at that stage, you know, you've made a decision based on what you thought you saw and what you saw. So I wouldn't be able to go into a press conference and know if I'm right or wrong. So I don't know. And even if I'm wrong, what are you going to get from it? I think there's an avenue to have a media person from the NRL or from the NRL referees in there, so someone that can sort of explain why decisions were made. Not whether they're right or wrong, but saying, you know, in this situation, that decision was based on this.
Yeah, I think that's more the question I was referring to, the why, like, how has this decision come to that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I think if we had a real... I think I'm a big believer in that the NRL referees need a media liaison officer, specifically for the referees, someone who is knowledgeable in refereeing and the rules of the game, but also knowledgeable in rugby league and the structure and why teams do things and how. For those reasons, for post-game, if there is a controversial game, straight on the front foot. You know, if there is a controversial call, whether it be right, wrong or indifferent, that person who is respected in the game, you know, could then give their opinion and people go, okay, well, we've got an answer now. Let's move on.
I like that you said on the front foot. I think sometimes, it takes too long, and that's when that grey area and the media jumps in and it just snowballs.
A game on Thursday night or Friday night, the whole weekend for people to toss and turn and argue until Graham has his, you know, his chat on Monday. You've already got those 2 days where you've got talkback radio, you've got all the TV shows, you've got the lead into the games, you've got the post-game shows, where then people will create their own rhetoric and their own opinion on what it was. And then by Monday, it's too late because we've already the media's already driven the agenda of what that, you know, how that game was officiated or that that decision. So yeah, if we could get out there and articulate why, because we're gonna make errors.
Yeah.
But some errors are unavoidable.
But players make errors, coaches make errors.
Yeah, so. But there are things that happen on a football field, and to the uneducated public, without being disrespectful, I don't mean uneducated. I just mean educating what we do and how we do it. You don't understand why we can make errors, because there's some things that you're watching, you go, that is so obviously wrong. How did they do that? Then you see why and how and where we're positioned, because we have to do certain things at certain times of the game. And you can, and if you knew that, you'd understand. So I think that's what we could do a lot better.
Do you ever watch those shows, those post-game shows?
Yeah, I'm a footy tragic. I love rugby league. Some of the guys won't read papers. Some of the guys won't watch any of those TV shows, and that's what they need to do to get through a week. I love rugby league, so I want to, you know, and I don't watch them shows to hear them bad referees. I watch those shows because there are some people on some of those shows, not all of them, but there are some people on those shows that I do respect as rugby league knowledgeable people, and I want to learn as much as I can about the game, and you know, and so I try and watch all games every week, but I don't get to see them all either, so I get a bit of a footy fix. But yeah,
for that reason, you talked about some of the boys not being able to watch shows, read papers, that kind of stuff. Obviously, that's their way of getting, you know, doing their job and keeping doing what their standard high. How does the NRL and the Referees Association help you guys with, say, mental health, all that kind of stuff? Do you guys have supports in place, and do you think they could do better at all?
Yeah, it's getting better. So a couple of years ago, the Matt Chechen drama off the back of the World Cup, when he got death threats and stuff off the back of the England-Tonga game. So off the back of that, the NRL got a lot better, and we have a sports psychologist in our staff now. And the sports psychologist we have has worked with Olympians and around Olympic. So he knows about high performance and high pressure and stuff like that. So he's been good for some of the guys. So, you know, there's a few of the referees in there that use him regularly. There's some that, you know, probably not as much, and some that don't use him at all, but that's because everyone's different. Everyone,
Looks
at the way they do things differently. So that's been good. And there is, like I said, over from Todd Greenberg on, and it's been really good at the moment with Andrew Apto and Peter Volandis, the support that we get from the NRL is outstanding. Like, I can't, you know, say enough about them as an employer and them trying to look after us. There was a long time where it wasn't that way, where we were sort of left on our own, to our own devices, and we were like a bit of a forgotten part of the organisation. But probably the last 8 years, it's been much better. And
following up from that, so I've been super curious all year, because the bubble. Obviously, you guys have to be involved in the bubble. Was Casey in it with you?
Yeah.
So you stay with the kids?
So our bubbles are same as players. So
yeah,
the restrictions on us as a group are you can only leave the house for games, training, or essentials. Essentials were, for some reason, haircuts and and grocery shopping. The thing around it was that if you live with your wife and stuff, they were meant to do the grocery shopping. So the referee wasn't meant to go to the supermarket where possible. Same with school, we could do school pickups and drop-offs. That's virtually all we could do.
So how'd that work with you two?
So we were sweet. I actually was better for our, we were sort of lucky ones out of it, to say, because we had each other there and stuff, and so we could both. So one day, you know, Casey could get out of the house and go into the shopping, and I could go and do it. So, you know, we weren't stuck at home all the time. Well, the other thing was you could walk your dog. So our dog is the thinnest and leanest he's ever been, because he's going for 3 miles
a day. That's really cool.
But it was pretty difficult. I'm a pretty out there guy. You know, Casey and I are both sort of outdoors, but we love getting out down the beach, or I love going hitting a golf ball around and chasing that around through the bushes and, you know, I like to get in the surf and that, but you know, we haven't been able to do it, it was a bit tough for us sometimes.
So you obviously live in Sydney. Did they have to have, like, if you guys didn't have a referee, say, up in Brisbane or North Queensland. So staying in that area. It would someone had to potentially move? Or is that
what happens is we're all based in Sydney.
Yep.
Every full-time NRL referee is based in Sydney. If you come from Brisbane, you have to move to Sydney. So what happened was for those games, so if it was your Sydney team travelling up there, we'd get on their charter flights. So we flew with the team.
Really?
Yeah.
And then as soon as the game was finished, got on the team bus, back to the airport, on the charter flight, back with the team. So it was different moves depending on whether the team won or lost.
Yeah.
Generally, they were pretty good. Even when they lost, they were really good. If it was two Brisbane teams or Melbourne playing, so it was Melbourne versus Gold Coast on the Sunshine Coast, we had a small 5-seater plane that we flew up in.
Oh, oh Jesus.
That's where we live. Jared got to go out to one of those games. So I didn't get to experience that. But yeah, that's the part of the world that we hail from. So
following up on that, how well do you know the players?
I've been around for a long time, so I know a lot of people in the game just through being around. But so in pre-season and even during the season, COVID was a bit different because we weren't allowed into other bubbles.
Yeah.
But we do a fair bit of training with the clubs. So it might be 2 days a week out of my week, I'll go and train. So on a Monday, I might go and do the day with Manly. So I might go and, referee their scrimmage in the morning and then do a late session with those guys.
You see that, Jared? Manly number one. See, just so you know.
Yeah, I saw your Manly jersey. You spend 2 and 3 days a week with clubs. So you get to know them pretty well. Then, obviously on the field on the weekends and stuff like that. So, you build up relationships with the players, and that's what that's all about as well. So they see you in a different light than the bloke that's blowing the whistle, giving it to them.
Who's
on the
shittiest bloke in the players? Yeah.
I was going to get to those. Jeez.
Who's the shittest bloke? Be like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, there's not too many, actually. I don't know, it sounds like a bit of a cop-out, but, like I said before, I'm a rugby league fan, and I find it hard not to have respect for anyone that's out there running around playing NRL footy or playing.
That's true, yeah.
That, and I know how tough that was. And you actually feel the hits as a referee out there, so I've got so much respect for all those guys out there. So without sounding like a fanboy, I'm in a bit of awe of them, those guys. So even when they do have shots and that at me, I probably don't take it the way I don't take it personally. it brought off a duck's back to me. So I just enjoyed being around them, actually.
Yeah, right. A
couple of things. I'm just going to finish off a couple of things on field that you brought up off Jared's questions, and then we're going to kind of shift a little bit. With regards to Graeme Annesley coming out and talking on Mondays, I didn't even know he did that until we started doing this podcast. It's not really something that's advertised outside of NRL.com. And literally, when we do our prep for the shows and if there's been a big call on the weekend, some of them this year were based around the forward pass a couple of times through the year. It's really insightful what he does, and he's very forthright and very honest and talks about the why and the conversation with the refs. I feel as though just doing this podcast, that's something that needs to be pushed forward. And with the talk shows through the week, a lot of them are just repeating the same stuff, because that would be a great spot, I think, for them to maybe focus on that. Because
for sure. I reckon they need to get someone like an ex-referee onto some of those shows. I'm happy to do that.
Yeah, there we go. And
Casey and I. For the last couple, we couldn't do it this year. COVID threw everything out of whack. So, Casey and I did a podcast that we used to put out weekly called A Ref Roundup. So we 2, maybe 3 seasons of it. The last 3 seasons, we started this year, so round 1 and 2 there was one. But then when we come back, because we recorded them out of the bunker, the studio in the bunker. That's not a clean zone. That's a dirty zone. So we couldn't do it this year. But it's something that we did. Based a lot of what Graham sort of spoke about on Mondays, but then we'd sort of go a bit more in depth into them, or there'd be some stuff that he didn't speak about, and we'd just talk about the technicalities of refereeing and why we come up with certain decisions and how we got to them. And there was a couple of times where I'd been dropped through the week for some poor decisions, and I went through the stuff that why and how and stuff like that, which got a lot of really good responses to, because it's like you say, it's stuff that people don't, you don't see that every week. You don't hear about the referees and how they come to their conclusions. You just see a decision on the weekend and rip in and say, well, you know, that's incompetent or whatever. But, you know, I've had a lot of people, and being on social media and that, I cop a lot on social media from people, but then I sort of direct them to that, and then they look at, and they come back to me and sort of be like, oh, I didn't understand why and how. And I think that's something that we could do a lot better as a group, you know, have someone out there, like I said before, post, but even like a social media account that explains some of these poor decisions. I know you're going to get trolls and you're going to get people attacking.
Yeah, of course, you always will.
But then that's what it is. But there's going to be a lot of people, like you say, that can educate themselves or, you know, be better educated around some of the things that we do and why we do it. And to me, I talk, my younger brother is a massive West Tigers fan and he's mad. And I can't go to the footy with him because it's like I said, you're not, how does this enjoyable for you? Because he's just stressing the whole time and yelling. So how, you spend your money to go and watch footy and isn't it meant to be fun thing? And someone like him, if he was better educated, he probably wouldn't stress as much.
That's what I think. Like when you're watching sport and you want it to be fun, it's the easiest when you've got a team that's consistently really good, like Melbourne, because if they do lose, you're kind of like, well, we'll probably win our next six. Or if your team's really, really bad, because you're going in there expecting them to be bad, and you're like, I'm just here to have fun. And if they win, it's a bonus. It's when your team's in the middle, and you're like, I could win, could lose. That's when that's the only time I'm actually nervous watching it.
Yeah,
all the rest of us.
I got a question for the trolls. That would be a great answer for them. Who do you support?
Who do I support?
Yeah.
Well, I grew up as a Balmain fan.
Oh.
The Tigers. But they're no longer around. Yeah, there is the West Tigers. So it made it a bit easier for me. I didn't have to worry about having a team in the NRL. I still have a soft spot with the West Tigers, but I played junior footy in South District and I played some junior rep footy with South. So, and you know, I grew up around that area, and even now to this day in that club, there's people involved that I sort of grew up with and knew, you know fairly well. So I have a real soft spot for the Bunnies as well. Saying that though, the West Tigers fans are the biggest, they hate me the most. turn up at Campbelltown or like over, I just get hammered by them and they always rip into me. And now that I can actually say who I went for, I think they might be a little bit surprised.
So I've got a couple of questions. It's going to be the last one on refereeing and then we're going to shift. But we've had Tony Adams on here before, the Mole.
Tony really well.
Yeah, so it was in, he was the journalist that came out and said your contract not being renewed through the NRL, and one of the reasons was, quote, not one of the boys. Is that, do you like, I don't know how much you can say, is that a fair portrayal, or is he talking about personalities or maybe more of NRL direction sort of ideals, or that's just...
No, I like to try and be as honest as I can around stuff. I've been around for 18 years. So at some stage, your career is going to be ended and it's sport. You know, you can't be there forever. So I don't have an issue, a major issue with not getting a contract for next year. I would love to, and I think I'm still capable. I'm still the fittest guy in the squad without, you know, sort of pushing my own barrel there, but you know, it's fact is fact. I'm still winning all the fitness tests and stuff there.
It's a numbers game. You can pretty well determine.
And going back to one ref doesn't help because there's less opportunities on the weekend. And the current coach doesn't think that I have the ability to do that. And that's his prerogative. And he gets paid the big bucks to make those decisions. And that happens anywhere. That could be at a footy club. There's plenty of players running around in reserve grade that think they're first grade footballers, but their coach doesn't think so. So I'm not, you know, going to jump up and down and carry on about that. But my issue that I did have, and the thing that really upset me, was the fact that I didn't get an opportunity to finish in the middle. So in the last round when there was some rubbers, I thought, not that the game owes me anything because I owe the game everything I've got. And, you know, I just think there was an opportunity there for me to finish. And the coaches that we have at the moment, the two coaches that are there, know my reasons why, I think. And you know, And there was a bit of an issue at the back end with that, but that's a lot. I don't walk away bitter or twisted or whatever, and I'll still be available to help out wherever possible. And you know, I still love that joint, and I'm forever indebted to it. So yeah, I'm not bitter or twisted. I'm just I was just a little bit upset, but it lasted 2 days and move on.
I I think I put you in a very like a small group of referees and for different reasons. Like sometimes when I switch on to watch a game, when Bill Harrigan was still refereeing as a Queensland supporter, you watched it just to hate him because like you just think of some Origin games, and then
he was all for Queensland.
Yeah. Then there was a guy this year or last year, we were trying to find him last week, who had like the biggest guns I'd ever seen. I saw he used to wear the smaller shirts he could for a referee. But I still enjoyed, and I will when I watch replays, the commentators, when they found out Gavin Badger was refereeing, that the first kind of minute before the players come out was speculating what the haircut would be like or what the beard was going to be like. And then when you put like color and stuff through your hair, I'm like, there's not many referees who would be a talking point in of themselves because they were, I don't know, brave enough, I guess, to show some personality on the field. Has that been something you've had your whole way through your career? Is it a natural thing? Do you get any comments about it from referee, from other referees, from players, from coaches?
From Casey.
Like that? From Casey.
Well, it's funny you say it because, I've always been a bit loose and stuff. You know, I mean, I've never really been someone who has always followed the rules or whatever. And that's a little bit in refereeing. So when I started refereeing, everything's so strict and everything had to be. So when I first started refereeing, you had to have black boots, you had to have white laces. The white laces had to be clean. You had to have, you know, the white shorts with pockets, and they had to be creased. And,
oh my god!
You know, so many, and you really got, and it didn't matter how well you refereed. If you didn't have that, they weren't going to give you a go. And I was, that didn't make sense to me. What made sense to me was your ability to do your job. You know, I mean, yeah, you had to look the part as well, but you know, it just never made sense to me. And I remember it was 2009, maybe. I was in Townsville actually, and I was at the sports store, and they had these red ASICS boots, bright red ASICS boots, and back then everyone was black boots. And a few of the players were, you know, coloured boots, but, you know, that was a bit up there. And I remember ringing, I'd only just started seeing Casey at the time, actually. We'd been together for a couple of years. And I remember ringing Casey, so I'm going to buy these red boots. These red boots, and she's like, you know, you're a bit crazy. I bought the boots. The next week I refereed at Brook, because I bought them up there. It was after the game. It was the next morning. The next week I refereed at Brookvale Oval. Must have been 2008, because we won, ref. And I refereed the game in these red boots. Robert Finch was our boss. And I remember getting a phone call after the game, and I was told if I wear those boots again, it will be in reserve grade. So I was going to get dropped for wearing red boots. I was the first person to wear coloured boots as a referee. Now everyone wears coloured boots.
Yeah.
But I remember that vividly, where I was, you know, going to get dropped for wearing red. And I could, and I was just like, are you serious? Did I referee well? You know, it's like, yeah, the game was great. I'm like, well, what's the matter? What boots are? And the thing was that the commentator started talking about my boots. And all the other stuff. I remember when I first came into training with the NRL squad, and you spoke about Billy Harrigan, who's a really good mate of mine.
Yeah.
I like Billy, and he's awesome. And he said to me, when I came into the NRL squad, I was just this little skinny kid who was always told that, you know, not so much a kid, but a little skinny fellow that, you know, was always told throughout my refereeing that I didn't fit in and I wasn't going to make it. I wouldn't be successful as a referee because I didn't fit in. I didn't have the right job. At that stage, most of them were either coppers or school teachers, you know, and it was just, I just didn't think I was a bit looser, and yeah. And Billy always said to me when I first, and he sort of took to me a little bit, and he said, well, you've got to find something that makes you stand out, you know what I mean? Like, because we're all referees, and you go out there and what you do is subjective, so you've got to have something that makes you stand out, whether it be training or whatever. So the coaches pick you, give people a reason to pick you each week. And at that stage, I didn't have any idea my personality, that would be the thing. But at that stage, I sort of looked at my fitness and I said, well, I don't really train. I didn't really take fitness too seriously. I was just lucky to be fairly naturally fit. I didn't have to do much to keep up with everyone else. So I was always mid-pack without trying. I thought, well, you know what? I'm going to really put effort into fitness and I'm going to be the bloke at the front. And so it took me about 2 or 3 years. And then, since 2010, I think, maybe about 2010, I haven't been bitten in a fitness test. So I just made sure that was my thing. So if you're out there, you get noticed for two places. You get noticed if you're way out in front, or you get noticed if you're way last. And so I thought, I'll get noticed out in front. So then that happened. And then, you know, I started to get opportunities. And then it was, you know, about the boots, that's just my personality. I don't know if you're going to get to it, but I'm a bit of a sneakerhead as well.
Yes, no, I've definitely got that written down.
We're well on top of that one.
I wear a different pair of shoes to training every day. And that, you know, the boys always talk about that. And I wear different colours. And, I, if I can show you. I get
two What have we got? Turn them side on.
So they're LeBron qualities.
Oh.
I just do. Yeah, and that's just me. That's just my personality, and that just seems people just seem to like it, and I just don't take myself serious. I get paid good money to as a footy fan to run up and down on the field and blow a whistle.
And you get the best view in the house,
Yeah, you know what I mean. And I get to travel. I get to go. I get to do things that people would pay big money for. I get to go and train with footy clubs. You know, in 2007, I got to go to Papua New Guinea with the Australian Prime Minister serving and be part of the touring party. So we went to Cairns for a couple of days. I trained. I did some scrimmage with. I played some footy, and Brad Fittler was the assistant coach, and Mal Meninga was the coach. And you know, I got to hang out with those guys, and you know, and then we went to Papua New Guinea, which was the greatest rugby league experience of my life. You know, last weekend, just through footy, I got to travel to Griffiths to do some mental health stuff with Brad Fittler and Nathan Hindmarsh, and you know, guys like that. I get to hang out with those guys who are, you know, guys that I look up to, guys that I idolise. You know,
how loose are they?
Not bad.
Happen to be able to blow a whistle.
How loose are they, Fittler and Hindmarsh?
What happens on tour stays on tour.
Jesus Christ.
Freddie's nowhere near as loose as he used to be.
Yeah?
And that's part of your new role with New South Wales Rugby League?
Yeah, so yeah, I do a little bit of work there, yeah.
Okay, cool.
that's the Saints up and nowhere near as loose.
Yeah, finish up with the footy stuff. Give us the player... I guess you'll miss the most, and player you'll miss the least.
Miss the most would be hard because there's so many that I really enjoy. You know, one thing that gets up.
I'm just talking on field, just talking on field stuff.
Yeah, yeah. One thing that really annoys me is the hate for Cameron Smith, especially in New South Wales.
Yes.
I love Cameron Smith. And it's nothing to do with, and this is why I hate saying it because I hate people to think, oh, well, this is why Cameron Smith gets the refs love, you know. It's not about that. He's such a good footballer, and he just knows, you know, all the stuff around being professional. He's it, yeah. And to do it for so long, and you know, he's nearly as old as me, and he's still running around. He's still playing. He's one of the best players in the game.
Yeah.
And the Sydney media just hammer him all the time, and it's something that really annoys me because he should be applauded for what he does. Yeah. And I know, you know, in Brisbane it's a bit different, and obviously in Melbourne. Where you know he probably gets the accolades he deserves, but the Sydney rugby league media just seem to have this vendetta against him and try and tear him down all the time. So when he retires, I'll definitely miss him. Someone I won't miss.
It can be
tongue in cheek. Because he's not in our game, but Will Chambers was hard work.
Yeah.
I know a lot of players say the same thing, so it's easy to say Will now because he's not in our sport. But he was.
A couple of weeks ago, he said Michael Ennis was the hardest person to referee because he knew the rules better than anyone.
Michael Ennis was the hardest referee because you had to be on your toes.
Yeah.
That's why he's really good on these TV shows that he does as an analyst.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because he understands rugby league probably better than anyone. And he did when he played. And so you knew if Michael Ennis was coming at you, he's coming educated. And he's got, you know, a lot of players have come to you. And Gal was one of them who'd come at you. And just try and slow the game down or just throw something just to try and throw you off your game. So you just talk about something that happened 5 minutes ago. You know, and that's easy to deal with. Paul talks about something 5 minutes ago and we're not talking about that now and I can brush him off. But when Michael Ennis comes at you, we talk about something specific, something that's happened, and it's very hard to just get... You try when you're in those situations to try and finish it as quickly as you can. It was a lot tougher to finish it real quick than me.
That's great. Can I ask the same question for coaches?
the best coach, I reckon, was Tim Sheens. I know he's a bit, but he would ring us through the week when he was coaching the West Tigers. He'd ring the referees and say, "We're doing this week. Make sure your referees know the rules." Like he knew every rule inside out, and he'd try and manipulate them. So I'll tell you a story. I'll tell this story a bit. So he rung one week and he said, "Well, make sure your referees know that if our winger puts his foot out and the ball's moving and he touches it, that the ball's already out," which is an obvious rule to us, right? He goes, because Matt Utai, or I forget who the other one was, he goes, you know, if the ball's rolling in near the in-goal, but still in the field of play, we're not going to catch it and get tackled there. We're going to put our foot out. We get the scrum feet.
Yeah.
Yep, sweet. No worries, we know that, Tim. So it happens. I'm playing the Bulldogs, and they kick it to the corner. Matt Utai goes to put his foot out and grab the ball. The only problem was he missed the ball, it went in the in-goal, and the Bulldogs scored. So they stopped trying that one. But I always say, and this is what I say to clubs and players and that, like, you can't manipulate something you don't know.
Yeah.
Tim Sheens knew how to manipulate the rules because he knew them all. Most players, I've done courses with NRL clubs, different programs of that, and I throw up some basic rules, and most players don't know them. And I say, well, if you're a plumber, you want to know everything there is about plumbing. If you're, if you're a bricklayer, you want to know all the tricks of the trade in bricklaying. Why wouldn't you want to know them all as a player? And it sort of hits them a little bit. You know what? Especially your halves and your hookers and your fights, manipulate the law and be educated on the laws, because it takes stress out if you know that the referee's right or wrong.
That's brilliant. That is such a good story. All right, so you've answered with regards to players, coaches. This one could be a bit trickier. And you mentioned the TV shows before, but media personality could be a journalist, could be a TV show, could be anyone that you'll miss chatting to, getting interviewed by, whatever, and one that you will just be happy not to be badgered by again, ever.
There you go.
Because as fans, we have journalists and media, but we're just like, we are not listening to that guy's
opinion. Yeah, they just feel like they start controversy for like mountain over molehills.
That's Paul Crawley, for sure.
Yeah, that bad.
I think Paul likes the sound of his own voice a little bit.
That's the stuff we're here for.
I'm just saying that because I'm sort of stuck for someone because, if you see him on NRL 360 or whatever it is, he's on there and he always tries to be the loudest voice in the room. And sometimes you've got to let other people speak, because if you're always trying to yell at the top of people, you miss. You don't always get, and that's probably why I say that, because there's other people trying to talk where you want to listen and you don't get an opportunity to hear what others have to say. I personally don't have any issue with, I've never had an issue with a journalist. I can't recall. I'm trying to think back of anything written about me. There's been a couple of things written about me that I didn't like, but
that comes with the job.
There's a couple that I really do. There's a few you spoke about Tony Adams before. I barely met Tony, every time I have, it's been a pretty positive interaction. I think the first time I really had a chat with him was at the first NRL Nines. I get on well with, I've had some really good conversation with Hannah Hollis. There's a guy, a journalist who works at NRL.com, Zach Bailey, who's the ultimate professional, and he's the best I've ever dealt with, Zach. Jake Duke at the moment. Jake's a young Indigenous fellow who's doing really good things at Channel 9, so I think he needs to be utilised a bit more there. I could keep that. Emma Lawrence, I think, is outstanding. It's endless, I think.
Very good.
Generally pretty good. Yeah, I know there's contract. I know they're bad refs and stuff like that, but I'll tell you someone who's really good and writes really good rugby league stories and has written some negative stuff about me as well, is Andrew Webster. I think Andrew Webster probably writes... His love of the game shines through in a lot of his writing, because his balance of positive and negative is pretty good. I think it's much weighted on more positive than negative. And the negative stuff he writes, he has to write, I suppose. There's always going to be negative. But I think Webby's probably, I think his stories are probably the best. He wrote a really good one about Benny Cummins not long ago. So
yeah, I'm with you on that one. And he's on Twitter as well. He took a break for a while because he gets slammed, especially if he writes anything negative. And I think it's because he comes from such an educated background. He really knows his stuff. And when he puts it out there, sometimes people just don't want to see fact, even if it goes against what they believe. And he gets...
I spoke to him. He was actually on the trip with us to Griffith last weekend. And I spoke to him about some of that stuff. And the problem for him is, he writes a negative story and he goes, why are you death riding rugby league? Why don't you want a positive story? So he writes a positive story and he goes, you keep death riding the game, now you want to be positive. I said, it's similar to my job. You sort of can't win no matter what you do as a journalist. And I get some are better than others, and some, look for sense, to create controversy more than others. But generally, you think most of them have the game at heart. I'd like to think so. But that might be me being off in the fairy lands, but I like to think the best. I try and like to think, the best of people. I'm not one of those people who are trying to think the worst.
Yeah.
And Joe, do you want to finish off with yours? And then
yeah, so I was just curious, because we touched on the whole mental health thing and NRL's doing a lot better. From what you've been through as a referee, you say you've owed them everything and all that kind of stuff. Would you let your kids be referees?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah.
A lot of it's about, I sort of get where you're coming from with this question. For me, the hardest part is junior league.
Yeah.
The dramas that go in junior league. But I remember when I first started refereeing, right? So I didn't take up refereeing because I wanted to referee. I got sort of, I don't know, I talk about fate and stuff like that, and I'm a big believer in it, and something, you know, I never had any, you know, I never thought about refereeing. It wasn't something that ever came into my head. And I didn't like referees when I played, to be brutally honest. And it was just that an ex-coach of mine sort of bumped me in the street at a time when I probably needed some direction. Like I didn't have a lot of direction as a kid. I didn't have structure or anything like that in my life. I was allowed to do what I want when I wanted. I never home. I virtually lived on the streets without being a street kid, if that makes sense. I didn't have any times when I had to be home, so I'd be out until 3 o'clock as a 15-year-old in the morning with all my mates running the streets. So I didn't have a lot of direction, and I was the last person you'd think would do something like that. But when I got into it, what I found was, yeah, there's negative stuff when it comes to when you actually go out and do the 20 minutes or 40 minutes on the weekend refereeing the kids' games, and you know the crap that might come with that from parents or players or whatever. But it's the stuff that I learned around that, you know, the stuff around structure, the stuff around respect, the stuff around having to be bigger than some things. Because I remember when I first started refereeing and wanting to fight people around the back, you know, players and stuff, when they said stuff to me or crowd, I couldn't control them. You know, I was you know, a bit of a hothead as a kid, and I didn't have a lot of self-control. So it taught me all that stuff. You know, I mean, I started refereeing when I was 17, 18. So I've sort of grown up and become the person I am through my interactions with people in refereeing. And I think I've grown up okay compared to where I could have been. So that's the reasons why I let my kid referee, because of,
okay,
because of friendships. And, yeah. But, you know, it taught me so much. You know, yeah, I'm going to go out on the weekend and people are going to yell stupid stuff at me. But, you know, the good that I can, that comes of it, much far outweighs the negative side.
So from your perspective, Casey, as a female referee, what would she say to all that kind of stuff? Say, you know, because she obviously being a referee, and unfortunately in society, being a female referee is a bit different, unfortunately. How does she think about it?
100% of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she's had to work, firstly, physically, the game doesn't slow down for a female. So she's got to work twice as hard as I do, fitness wise, and that. So
yeah,
she's had operations. She's had to work, you know, her body, you know, she's bashed it around a bit to try and get to the fitness level she's had to get to. Secondly, there's the sexism in it, and there is,
yep,
and there still is.
Yep.
It's much better than when she first started, and the higher you get, the less of it there is. So at the level she's at now, you know, very minimal of that.
Yeah.
But coming through the grade, some of the things that were said to her by coaches and stuff in, you know, reserve grade even, you know, where she had comments like, players don't want to hear a woman yell at them for 80 minutes. This is from coaches, like referees, coaches. If they wanted that, they'd stay at home with their missus. You know, which is quite degrading to a young female coming, yeah, through, who has aspirations, you know, and looks up to this person. This is someone that, you know, someone that has an impact on the career. And for a long time, she sugarcoated all of that because she thought, you know, the best way is to just shut up and move on, but she won't do that anymore. And she stands up for herself. She's really strong, which I love about her. But yeah, she's had it really tough. And there's a story on that as well. So it was similar. Like, we'd only been together for a couple of years, and she refereed it might have been a lower grade game, a Jersey flag or an SG ball game, so an under-18s game. And then she was standby for the next game, which was one of our third tier clubs, so Sydney Shield. So she hadn't even been on the field, and she was sitting, and I was sitting in the crowd. She was sitting in the crowd with me, still in the gear, ready to go in case if the referee or the touch judge get injured, she goes, yeah, on. So we're 20 minutes into this game, and the touch judge actually trips over a witch's hat in the corner and breaks his ankle. So Casey has to go on. She hadn't even gotten on to the sideline yet. She'd grabbed the flag, was halfway out, and this guy who was standing in front of me, didn't know that I was with her, just starts giving it to her. like the most sexist, abusive, and there's kids and children, you know, all around, and just giving it to her. She hadn't even got on the field yet. And I just sort of stood behind him for a bit, and he kept going. I said, oh, mate. I said, there's women and kids around, you know. Probably need to pull up a bit. And he sort of stopped for a bit, and then he kept going again. I said, mate, I said, now you're inappropriate, and you've been asked to stop. You probably should, you know, zip it up. And he goes, oh, well, she puts on that gear, and she deserves everything she gets, and she's this and she's that. I said, mate, that could be your – I said, mate, just wait. What if that was your wife, sister, mother, whatever? He's like, I don't give a – you know, started giving. I said, well, actually, she's my wife. And he wanted to fight me around the back. you know, I mean, and that's the stuff that she, I don't get that. Then, you know, yeah, she's had to deal with that for a long time. And the problem is that for females coming through, because there's so few of them, if they do speak up, you know, you work so hard to get to a certain level. If you speak up, you're in fear of losing it all.
Yeah.
So for most of it, they just shut up and, you know, do what they're told or put up with all that so that, you know, to enhance their career. But what that does, and this is, you know, how much respect I have for Case, is that she goes, well, you know, what happens to the young girl coming through behind me and she's not as strong as I am and she can't deal with that and she gives it away and we lose the opportunity to have an outstanding official or someone whose dream, you know, that given up because someone was, you know, someone couldn't control themselves. So, yeah. Yeah, sometimes it's to a detriment, just, you know, the way she speaks up and stuff, but, yeah, I love her even more and more for it.
Yeah, so that's following awesome. Up from that, you said when you were younger while you referee, you want to take blokes out the back. And being a referee taught you to, you know, self-control and, you know, water off the duck's back. I think you said that earlier. Was it another challenge for you when that kind of stuff happened to Casey?
Oh, massively.
Yeah, you struggled with...
She'd come home and tell me and stuff, and I'd want to go and front people.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, don't, you know. It's just going to... Especially when she was younger. You know, and she... And you know, when she was younger, she was a little bit naive to some of the things that were happening around her as well. You know, because that was the norm. You know, she probably wasn't as educated as she is now around all that stuff and social issues. And, yeah, she's been a real big advocate for the young girls coming through, being given opportunities and just basic things like she turned up to grounds and there's no female change room.
Yeah.
You know, and it, to us, like, it's not an issue anymore, but for a young girl, a 16-year-old girl, you know, coming through the ranks to turn up and there's, you know, men there and you can't get changed, so you've got to turn up and leave in sweaty gear. So it's only a minor thing, but even things like throughout all of her career, she never had female cut clothing. She always had men's clothing. And everyone's like, well, just wear men's clothing. But imagine turning that around and saying to a man, well, just wear woman's clothing. It's all right. You just got to, you know, man, it's uncomfortable. It's not right. Just little things like that where she's now really advocating for change and making sure. And I know at a lot of levels now, you know, because of stuff, some of the stuff she's done, you know, that girls are getting female cut clothing. Yet there is special, you know, areas for women to get changed at games and that now, most grounds and, you know, where possible. And things are done to make sure that they are. They're the little things that when she finishes up, they're going to be her little legacies.
Yeah.
I reckon we'll, I was just like lost in that, just listening. I'm like, what was my next question going to be? so I think we're like, we'll finish there with Gavin Badger, the referee. We might circle back with other questions. So let's go to Gavin Badger, the sports fan, the fitness freak, we'll say. And start looking at some of your interests elsewhere. The first question I've got is a rugby league question, but from a pure fan's point of view. So it's got nothing to do with officiating, nothing to do with referee.
Yep.
And Jared and I have talked about this on the podcast. It's actually one of the reasons we started doing this is because Jared had moved away and we didn't get to chat footy as much. But we'd always talk about what rule would you bring into rugby league and what rule would you get rid of? So this is just from a pure fan's point of view, not officiating wise.
Yeah, I'd get rid of the differential penalty from a scrum. I think it's just useless.
Yeah.
I just don't understand. It's archaic. It's there because of when scrums were competitive, and it's there when we had 20 scrum penalties. So, you know, we didn't want it to be a penalty goal-a-thon.
So to me,
it just doesn't make sense to me now. You know, we've changed all these rules, especially around the scrum, to make the scrum more of a something we can play off.
Yeah.
But teams are just and teams are literally taking the piss where they'll just run and be offside because they know the only thing that's going to happen is it's going to stop the game. They're going to have penalty kick for touch or a tap.
Yeah.
No points going to be scored for it. So we're going to have a structured line. You know, I like the fact that we can, you know, play a bit of footy off the back of scrum.
I think we picked that up. We picked that up, what, 3 weeks before Gus Gould brought it up? You could give that away on purpose and prevent a team having a penalty shot at goal to tie it if you needed to.
The other one, and I'm glad that they changed it, they took a monumental stuff up in the grand final, was the Mitchell infringement rule. We changed that. I'm glad that we changed that now. When it hit Travis Turner, the trainer for the Roosters, got hit with a ball in the grand final last year, and the Roosters ended up getting a full set of six out of it, where now we just go back and play the last play, the ball, replay that play, which I think is a smart move.
That rule's been around forever, and it goes to the attacking team. Whoever's in their opposition half gets the ball, and it's such a surprise when that actually happens.
Well, Brett Kamali was one of the best at say he try and kick the ball at the referee. So when they were attacking the goal line on last tackle, he'd look for you and try and, because if it hits you, to make sure he gets full set of six again.
Yeah.
So he'd actually try and do it.
I love that. That's brilliant.
Yeah, well, he's smart. He was smart. But so they're the two that I've always, you know, I've had my gripes about. So one's been changed, and hopefully I would expect that, you know, into next year, that they will change the differential, I hope.
What do you reckon about this one? This rule was brought in to take players like Billy, like to keep people like Billy Slater, James Tedesco in the game, where the you kick it dead, it's the seven tackle set. I think Jared and I are both in agreement, and most of it we've talked to. If the team attacking has set up a try scoring situation, so they put a grubber through and the wingers come through and they've knocked on in the attempt to score in a try, we believe that the defensive side's not really warranted a seven tackle set. The attacking team's been trying to set up a scoring play, and it's kind of been like a flow on. It's done. That rule's done what it's meant to have done. Stop teams kicking ball dead. But that's just something I'd like to have a modification to. But
I'm also a bit of a traditionalist, and I hate that we change the rules so much.
Yes.
I get that. I get that we have to at some stage. Like some things we do, like the rule book, the rugby league rule book, was written in 1908, and it has never been rewritten.
Just I think we need to just rewrite
it. It's just been things taken out, things added in. And that's where you get some anomalies to rules, because when you take this rule out, people aren't thinking about what that affects the other way, like that differential penalty one. You know, I mean, we take away, you know, territorial advantage and stuff like that, and then that becomes sort of unnecessary. And so I think we just need to rewrite the rule book, and then
I think how often do you guys get scenarios in games? Scenarios put to you, and you guys have to.
We're off refereeing, Jared. Jeez.
I just wanted to ask.
But I'll answer that one just quickly, because there's a.
I'm just playing with
it. I just
want to ask.
We do that a lot, but we do a session at training. This is interesting stuff as well, where we call it beat up, brain training under fatigue. So we'll be on a spin bike, on a roller, and like get our heart rate up to a certain point, and then they'll throw rules questions at us. So we have to make decisions under fatigue. Sometimes it might be math questions. I left school at 16, so I don't think I'm not going to struggle with some of the math questions. I'm not the smartest bloke in the world. Sometimes I'll throw us an iPad game, such a memory retention game, while your heart rate's up and fatigue. So we're doing stuff, or there's other times where they'll give us scenarios from a game, and it'll be like, as we're going, so we hit 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off, certain heart rates, and they'll say penalty against certain player for a high tackle, then it'll be this team scored and missed the goal, then it'd be the other team kicked the penalty goal. And at the end of the 6 minutes, it'd be, okay, what's the penalty count? What's the game score? You know, what time did this happen in the game? So you've got to retain all that stuff.
That's
so
there brilliant.
There's some really high intense training.
Yeah, because why I was asking that is because, and you gave me an awesome answer anyway, but following up from that, you said the rule book hasn't been rewritten and scrums are... Oh, you didn't say it, but scrums are essentially useless now. They're a way of restarting play. If a team started pushing, how much do you train for scrum scenarios? Because
we don't do a lot, and teams don't do a lot. We just look at it as long as they stay bound, we're happy to. But as soon as it breaks up, for safety reasons, we have to stop it. So so the smart thing is for the team that are getting pushed off the ball, just break, and we have to stop it. Unfortunately, that's what it is.
I can't wait to see the day if someone just goes, we'll start pushing every scrum and then everyone will do it. It's like the stripping rule a couple years ago.
I know.
A couple of clubs are going to do it.
Finally.
All right, outside of rugby league, on your Twitter it just says sports fan. Number one sport outside of rugby league, or you don't have an order, it's just whatever you love watching. You've mentioned NFL. Anything?
Yeah, probably at the moment it's the NFL. You know, if it wasn't COVID times, we would be at the moment, Kate and I would have just left Buffalo in the States. We would have been at the Chiefs were playing on, would have played, they played today, but it was scheduled for Thursday. So it would have been Buffalo on Thursday. That was, we planned our end of season holidays around the Kansas City Chiefs schedule. So yeah, we would have been just leaving Buffalo. I think we're going across, I've got a mate who lives in Toronto and we're going to go to Toronto for a while and back down the east coast of the state. So yeah, so we love the NFL. It's probably my favourite. But I love most sports. I played nearly everything I could as a kid. The NFL is probably the one at the moment that I'm getting the most enjoyment out of.
I'm a big fan of all sports. I specifically love American sports, not even just for the sports themselves, but how their sports are structured, how like each of the teams has their own broadcasters, their own writers, their own, and just how it's an entertainment business basically. And we've talked about looking at conferences in the NRL, how they use conferences overseas as etc. You said so Kansas City fan, I'm assuming in the NFL. What was I getting to in that? Relating back to the bubble over here, did you see much about what was happening with regards to the bubble in the NHL, in the ice hockey, and how they got their season finalized and what their bubble kind of looked like?
Oh, I saw a little bit of that. Probably the least sport that I would take any interest in the States is ice hockey. And I think it's just because it's nothing like anything I've done. Casey's a really, really good ice skater and snowboarder and stuff. But when it comes to anything like that, I am terrible. I can barely stand up on ice skates, and she loves going ice skating because it's one thing that she is better than me at. if I can't do it, I don't like it. I haven't been all over the NHL bubble.
I was just saying, like, when the COVID hit and they had 7 to 8 games left in their season, depending on who it was, and instead of having 16 teams in the playoff, there were still 24 that could have made it. They made 2 bubbles, one in Toronto, one in Edmonton. It's 12 full NHL squads plus 50 traveling staff, all within one big precinct. And so they're playing 3 games a day, 6 teams in the same rink, and they couldn't leave there for 2.5 months. So I was just like, it was like the Simpsons dome, literally. Yeah. They had a 2-block radius for 12 teams. It would have been horrible.
The NBA was like that with the WNBA as well. They were all at Atlanta.
They're at Disney World.
How would opposing NRL team go with that? The testosterone involved in that one.
Yeah, well, it almost happened it might have been the WNBA, where there was almost a stink in the foyer of the hotel.
Yeah. Because they'd
come off the field. And there was one in the NBA where they said to it, that player said, mate, I'll see you in the foyer. It would have been interesting. It would have been good for a reality show.
Oh, hell yeah. they were doing that on a couple of social media channels throughout it. Yeah. But, yeah, they're only going to show what was sanctioned, I guess, by the overall.
I'm just imagining, like, you got the Cowboys on a floor above the Broncos and they get the speakers out at 2 a.m. just on the floor.
Right now, the Titans will be above them as well. Titans are getting the penthouse right now in Queensland.
And you guys have just coppered everywhere.
We'd be in the shit out the back because we would have been the last ones thought of. They always leave us the last.
In the outhouses.
We'd have been in the janitor's closet or something.
I'll let you take the next one. Sneakers or peak fitness? Where are we going?
Either or. I can talk about myself and that stuff all day.
Yeah, there we are. Right. Peak fitness caught. I'm a PE teacher by trade, so we're just finishing up our training programs unit. So Peak Fitness is altitude training. You've got a link to it on your Twitter handle. I'll just have that's at the badge 72. Brilliant feed. What is Peak Altitude Training? Are you the owner, partner? Is it somewhere where you train?
So yeah, we're part owners with a mate of ours. So it came about, I spoke before about, you know, wanting to be the fittest and you know, and always being in front. And by doing to do that, you've always got to sort of change up what you're doing. You've always got to look for new ways to improve, otherwise you get stale and stagnant. So a guy, so where we live, the complex that we live, we've got a really good gym in the complex. It's like a almost like a fitness first, but it's only for residents. And there's staff there and stuff like it's really good. It's I think they sell it as the biggest residential gym in the country.
Wow.
And one of the PTs there, I became pretty good mates because I spent a fair bit of time across there.
Yeah.
And he just started working in an altitude fitness place in the city. So he was the PT there. So he said, come and try this, you know, you might enjoy it. So I went in there, did a couple of sessions. So we generally train at 3,500 meters above sea level, and normal oxygen in the air is 25%, between 20 and 25%, yeah, yeah, yeah. We train at about 14%. So what it does, it's classed as like illegal blood doping. So what you're doing is you're just reproducing more red blood cells.
Mm-hmm.
So you train in there, and what it is, you get 30% more benefits in the same time. Mm-hmm. So then when you come down and run at normal altitude sea level,
easier.
You don't deplete as quickly. So, you know, they class it as illegal blood doping. I went and did a few sessions there, and I loved it. Yeah, and it's not for everyone because it can be pretty tough in there and stuff. So then we went there for about a year. We were training in there for about a year. And then we sort of started talking up about, you know, we wouldn't mind jumping in to business or something. So then we went and bought another one with this guy, with Scott. So we've had it for 2 years now, just on 2 years. And it's a bit of a hobby. We don't make any money out of it. We sort of just break it even on it, but it's not costing us anything. So it's good. And it's somewhere for us to train. But yeah, we do a bit of PT out of there. We train. We've had some boxers in there. So Darcy Lusick, who played with Manly, fought Justin Hodges. He did all his work in there. We get a lot of boat crew, a lot of rollers. We get a lot of trekkers, a lot of people traveling to do Everest and stuff like that. So they'll come in and do 10-week programs there. We have sleepovers, so people get used to altitude. So we've got to a point where we have some elite sessions in there where we train at 5,000 metres. That gets the sweat going and it gets the heart jumping. But yeah, it's fun. I like interacting with people, so it's good to get in there when I can. Obviously, this year it's been pretty ordinary. I haven't been able to get in there at all because of the bubble. I've only just gotten out the bubble on the weekend, so I'll get to spend a bit of time over there this week. But yeah, it's just a bit of fun at the moment and something that down the track that we'll put a bit more time into and hopefully be able to pump it up a bit. But
it's brilliant.
Just, especially something for us to train.
Looking through the website and what you could do with that and the education that people would be able to find out about their own bodies. And I'm just looking, literally the last two units I've taught, one was on performance enhancement and talking about altitude training compared to blood doping. And then going into training programs, this would have been bloody perfect if I'd found it a little bit earlier. But
it's funny as well, because last year we went to Denver, Casey and I, and we had a connection with the US Olympics training facility in Denver. Denver is called the Mile High City. So they're a mile above sea level.
That's where the New Zealand Kiwis team went and trained a few years ago.
They played there. So we had a few connections over there in the fitness industry and stuff. And so we got into a bit of a look around their center, and they have an altitude room there, which is the opposite to ours, because their attitude is live high, train low. So they just mix it up a little bit. So they had the room at sea level compared to our room at above sea level.
You would have smashed it.
But going in there and talking to them about how they do things and stuff was really eye-opening as well. The training facility there went to the Olympics. Their Olympic training facility is 6 sports, so they have boxing, fencing, basketball, wrestling, swimming, and shooting. All in this, that was their facility for that. And just the fine detail that they train their athletes at and the stuff that they do is insane. I loved every minute of it.
Oh, as you would. I'd love that, and I'd have no idea what half the stuff is that's going on. Now, I've left this one to last just out of probably pure jealousy. with regards to the sneakers and the sneaker collection. Now, my last couple of years of high school and then university was probably when I had the most money, which doesn't make any sense. It's a bit, only because I was working casual jobs, which is good hourly rates, and I had nothing to spend money on. So I used to get shoes.
And you didn't have two children.
I didn't have two children, a wife and a mortgage. Yeah, that helps. And I got up quite a big collection, but I had to stop. How big's your collection? What's your favorite pair? What's your favorite brand? Does it chop and change? Give us a lowdown.
And how much does Casey have, like, you having more shoes than her?
No, we're the same size foot.
Oh. That's perfect.
That helps enormously. She's as bad as me now, so
it's addictive. As well.
How many pairs? Not counting like training shoes and stuff. Probably 200.
Whoa! Oh my! I was going to say like 28, 30.
Oh no.
Do you have your own room?
Yeah. So what happened was, when we bought our place, there wasn't enough cupboard space. So I've got a built-in wardrobe built for shoes.
Oh. Downloading. It moves around.
I don't have a recent one. I do have photos of it, but yeah, I've got quite a collection. I'm Nike Air Max man. I love like Air Max 90s and
yes,
ones. They're my favorites. Got a few pairs of Jordans. I've got some, generally that's what I've got. Air Max 1s, Jordans, and 90s.
The only thing I'd add into that would be, I'm still a sucker. My favorite brand overall is Vans, but a classic Vans, just low cut skate shoe, basically. Jordans, yeah. And Air Maxes. Back at uni, I had a purple, green and yellow pair of Air Maxes. There's only 10 pairs in Australia. And yeah. There was two in Brisbane and I got one, and that's what kind of set it off. And then bright orange and bright blue Reebok pumps. They were so good. I've got some Reebok
pumps as well.
Oh,
I've got a pair of four orange ones. There's a collection that was called the Seven Deadly Sins. I've got one of them was Gluttony, and I've got them in the States. It's funny, when we go to the States every year, I know wherever we go, I know where the best sneaker stores are, and I've got hookups and...
I'm just imagining
stuff like you've always. Well, these days you can't buy it. Like, if you want a pair of shoes that are a limited release, you next to no chance of buying them at retail. So no. The resale value is just insane. So unless you've got a few connections, you're really struggling to get anything these days.
I'm just imagining your kids are on bunk beds and you've just got a room. Yeah,
I was going to say, how many weeks do you go without buying food? We're like, kids, we would go shopping, but. The limited release Air Jordans are coming out, and we've got priorities in this house.
There's always priorities. The shoe's always first. That's what my daughter. My daughter always says she can't wait till I die because she gets the shoe collection.
Oh man, I've still got another 3 or 4 years till my kids finish daycare and then going to school. I'm like, I can't, with that extra $500 a fortnight or whatever it is, the jersey collection that I'm creating in my head that I finally want to start. Oh man,
what jerseys? I've probably got maybe 100 jerseys as well.
Yeah, I would say that.
NBA and NFL. And then hats is my other one as well.
Yeah, hats I can collect.
I've probably got 200 hats as well.
Is that Boston Bandits? Boston Bombers or whatever the... Boston Dodgers, sorry, before they moved. That B? Or is that Red
Sox? Oh, it is, yeah. This is Red Sox.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, I've got some of the Brooklyn... Dodgers ones before.
Yeah, Brooklyn Dodgers. That's what I was going for, not Boston Dodgers. I'm sorry for all the... Actually, I don't care about the Boston fans. It's my most hated city.
Which one?
Boston. Brooklyn. Anything to do with Boston.
Oh, Boston.
Ugh. No, thanks.
I'm pretty sure my brother lives in Boston.
One of my best mates. How's this? Actually, this is all you need to know about Boston sports fans. My mate goes for Red Sox, Patriots, etc. His wedding is this Sunday.
Oh, no.
So we've had a NRL podcast all season, and Jared and I were going to be doing a live show, and I didn't realise till today that it's my mate's wedding.
Oh,
and no. I was like, sorry, that's just inconsiderate. Like,
look, you're telling me the first time about this live show.
Jared, that's news.
I didn't know anything about that either. I wanted to sit down and watch with beer.
Because Saturday we're going down to see my brother and his wife's baby for the first time, and I said, hey, and Sunday Jared will be down, we're watching the footy live. And she's like, no, we got Matt's wedding.
Yeah,
All right, so we've got maybe time for maybe one more. Is there? I'm just going to direct people back to your Twitter feed, because there's not, Twitter's not a huge thing in Australia still, I think, outside of maybe like the sporting world. You've got a lot, you do a lot of interactions with podcasts, with support groups, charities, a lot of it around Indigenous education, Indigenous perspectives, mental health, rugby league, child abuse, et cetera, et cetera. And there's, and a lot of your tweets are very, tweeting's hard because you've only got a certain number of characters, but you put a lot of passion in it, and you can see that you're very well educated in those areas. What am I trying to, I've got a question forming in there.
Seriously, man?
Sorry?
He's got wine up in the top of the roof and you just can't even come up with a question.
Oh, no, I'm just looking at it. It's kind of, it shapes, it says a lot about who you are, I think, and that you're a very selfless person and just wanting to educate those who don't know about talks before they have an opinion on them. Is that kind of like a, not a subplot, but a subtlety of the page? That's what you want people to pick up about you, that don't have an opinion until you educate yourself?
Stuff like that. When it comes to social issues, people are really quick to sort of get their guard up. So if someone says a racist joke, it doesn't mean they're a racist person. It just means you said a racist joke. So if someone calls you out on it, you're just going to be prepared to go, yeah, you know what? That was a racist joke. It doesn't. If you get called out for being racist, sexist, homophobic, whatever it may be, have a look at what it is and why someone's calling you out on it. And if I call someone out on a comment, a statement, I'm calling them out on that statement. If you continually do things like that, then you know, we're going down the track of, you know what, now I think that is who you are. But just because you get called out, and that's the thing, in Australia, people always just sort of get their back up straight away. So instead of seeing the joke or the comment or whatever for what it is, they see it as you calling them racist, so they don't get the point. So a lot of my stuff, you know, a lot of my thing is just trying to educate and say, well, you know, there's things, and I still do it myself. You know, I'm going to stop myself all the time. You know, I'll say something or you know, an off the cuff for a mark and say, wait, that's probably not appropriate. You know what I mean? So it's no one being holier than thou or no one putting themselves up on a pedestal or thinking they're better than anybody else, because we all do it, whether it be, you know, racist, homophobic, sexist, whatever, misogynist. You know, we especially when it comes to humour, that's the thing that gets me the most. We go, oh, I'm only joking, or, you know, I wasn't being serious. But to the person that's hearing that, they hear that all the time, and that's who they are. It makes them feel inferior. Like little statements, like something that I call allies out a bit. You know, where someone will be playing touch or something, someone will say a bat throw a bad pass, and they're like, oh, how's your husband throw? Or you pass like a girl. You know, so what you're doing is, the connotation of that is saying that girls are inferior. You know what I mean? And forever and a day, we've all sort of joked, I wear pink shoes, or do they make them in men's? You know, so what are you saying there? You know what I mean? It's just those little things that when people get called out on that, they don't want to, they just don't want to believe that they could be that person, because 99 times out of 100, they're not. It's just something they've said. So, that's the big one for me, the fact that you just got to sort of sit back and say, why have I been called out? Why did someone feel the need to call me out on that? And look at that, not look at trying to take it too personal. I think that's what I try and get across, and that's why, you know, I post certain things and say certain things to show people that, you know, we can all be better.
Outside, so I'll say that. So it's the badge 72 on Twitter. Do you have an Instagram handle that people can check out, or there's nothing, or anywhere else?
Badge 72 on Instagram.
And on the write-up to this show as well, guys, we'll put up the Peak Training website. So any listeners in Sydney, if you want to check out what it's all about.
Manly Town too. It's underneath Manly Leagues Club. It's actually in the Manly Leagues Club building. There you go.
Well, there we go.
Awesome.
That's just down the road in Markle and Arnie.
The Manly boys come in and do some stuff in there as well.
Oh, who's going to win this weekend?
Who's
going to win this weekend? Last question before we leave. We've got about literally less than a minute.
I've been asked this a couple of times, and I hate sitting on the fence, but I think I would like to see Penrith win, because I like the way they're playing. Like they're playing like kids.
Yeah.
They're having fun. But Melbourne is so professional. Like, yeah, when it comes to the big games, they've got the big game experience, and you know, they're just grinding, grinding. If they happen to ever be in front of the game, they're very happy.
Hey, sorry for the ending there. We ran out of recording time, but Gavin went on to say how professional Melbourne is and how he believes they will get the job done on the day. Really hope you enjoyed that interview. It is up live now also on YouTube, so you can get on there and see what it was like, basically chatting to him and how excited he gets with regards to some questions. Keep an ear out for a State of Origin 1 preview show, which will be dropping Monday morning. See you next time.
Thank you for tuning in to Six Again. Connect with the show on Twitter, Instagram, and the Six Again website. All links via the show's bio. Be sure to check out Adam's craft beer choice of the week.